From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Florida is known for its stringent open record statutes, known as the Sunshine Law, intended to maintain public access to government records and communications. But recent lawsuits against state agencies and officials in Tallahassee are raising concerns and generating headlines. In recent weeks, a Tallahassee attorney has broadened his lawsuit over access to public records against Governor Rick Scott and Attorney General Pam Bondi. Meanwhile, last week, another lawsuit was filed against a state agency over lost recordings of an alleged secret meeting over who would receive a state government contract. We explore the impact of the allegations and the strength of Florida's Sunshine Law. Plus, the number of dead dolphins washing up along the U.S. Atlantic coastline has been on the rise in recent years due to a deadly virus that's now spread to the Indian River Lagoon. We'll look at ongoing efforts to track the virus and what can be done about it. First, this news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for being with us. Since the summer of 2013, the number of bottlenose dolphin strandings has been elevated all along the U.S. Atlantic coastline from New York to Florida. Most of the dolphins that have washed ashore have been found dead. Skin and oral lesions on the animals is a sign that a deadly virus is behind the increased number of deaths. Now, that virus appears to have moved into dolphin populations in Florida's Indian River Lagoon. Just last month, researchers with the Hub's SeaWorld Research Institute documented 18 dolphin deaths. That compares to the roughly 26 dolphin deaths documented in the lagoon region annually. Research scientists around the Indian River Lagoon are seeing new deaths almost every day. Joining me now for a closer look at impacts of the virus and efforts to track its spread is Megan Stolen. She's a research scientist with Hub's SeaWorld Research Institute. Megan, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thanks for having me.
We're also speaking with Blair Mays. She's a marine mammal biologist and Southeast Marine Mammal Stranding Network Coordinator for the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration. She oversees and coordinates marine mammal strandings from North Carolina to the Caribbean and over to Texas. Blair Mays, thanks for your time today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I invite listeners to join our conversation as well. The number to call is 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. You can post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org, or join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Blair Mays, I wanted to start with you. When did you first become aware of the current elevated number of dolphin deaths along the U.S. Atlantic coast? When did this first start happening?
Well, as you mentioned in your introduction, we started noticing an increase in strandings back in July of 2013 in the New York, New Jersey, Virginia Beach area. And from then on, the mortalities or strandings continued through present day. So the mortality event or the strandings basically occurred from North New York as far south as Florida. The southernmost city that has been impacted is Vero Beach, Florida, or Indian River County. So far, right now, most of the strandings have declined in the northern states. However, the strandings in Florida continue, and Florida is still being impacted.
And I mentioned earlier that a virus is responsible here. What can you tell us about the morbillivirus?
Sure. The virus that's being implicated here is called the cetacean morbillivirus. So about 96% of all the animals that have been tested have been positive for the cetacean morbillivirus. Morbillivirus is what is called a paramyxovirus, and is what is known to be in dogs, canine distemper. It causes measles in people, rinderpest in cattle, and focine distemper virus in seals and sea otters. And it's also known as cetacean morbillivirus, which impacts porpoises, dolphins, and whales.
And so do the animals contract it through contact with one another, or how else is it passed?
Yes, that's correct. It spreads fairly easily through contact with one another, and it also is spread through aerosol particles. So as we know, dolphins are air breathers. They swim in pods. They're breathing very close to one another, so those air particles can be transmitting those diseases. So the virus is very quickly spread through different dolphin populations and stocks.
And Megan, kind of turning to you, when did you and your research scientists working with you at Hubs first notice that the virus had moved into the Indian River Lagoon area?
We were responding to increased levels on the Oceanside Beach. So we have sort of two different types of dolphins in our area. We have Oceanside dolphins, which are the ones that were coming down from the north that Blair talked about. And then we have a resident population of dolphins that inhabit the Indian River Lagoon system, which also includes Mosquito Lagoon. And those dolphins also travel up through the Jacksonville area. So we were sort of on alert when we started getting animals on the Oceanside that had the virus. And we tested a couple of animals that died in the lagoon at the same time, and they were negative. So we felt like, you know, we had dodged the bullet for a while. And that was back in November of last year. And then what happened was in July of this year, we started creeping up in numbers and starting to suspect that something else was going on in the river system. And then August came, and we really got hit hard with sort of double what we would have normally expected. So at that point, we had been sampling the animals like we would for the virus, and that's when we essentially started really sending the samples out through NOAA to be tested, and they came back positive. But then what happened was we actually went back and retrospectively tested some of the animals that had died in the river system earlier and detected the virus in the tissues all the way back through December of 2013. So we feel like at that point, when the animals essentially got to us on the ocean side from the north, somebody either went in or out of the lagoon, got the virus, and brought it in and essentially infected the population at that point, the end of 2013.
Would you characterize the impact at this point as severe? Like how many dolphin fatalities do you see these days?
So I'm considering it severe. We are getting dolphins just about every day for the last couple of weeks. August was especially bad, as I said. Part of the concern, part of those numbers are explained by the fact that August is our primary calving period for dolphins in the river system. So about half of the animals in August were actually calves, meaning, you know, neonate babies that were being born, essentially. And their moms either had the virus or even passed the virus to the babies, we believe. So we sort of, unfortunately, we got hit kind of at the wrong time. Mm-hmm. And now we're pretty concerned about it.
And just like, you know, with human babies, are dolphin babies more susceptible to disease pathogens?
They are, yeah. So it takes time to build immunity to things. And naturally, just like a human baby, if the mom is already compromised, if she is already sick, even if she hasn't passed it along to her baby yet, if the mom's not doing well, then in some cases, she's unable to essentially care for the calf, too.
I mean, and even without testing, which of course I understand is important to confirm, but are there outward signs and symptoms that would indicate a dolphin has been infected with this virus?
Yes. So what we look for before things are tested are lesions on their essentially their face, their rostrum, around their eyes, around their teeth. Actually, we've had a lot of animals with sores inside their mouth, on their tongues. And then those lesions can actually spread over the rest of the body. The other thing we notice once we
dissect the animal. It's called a necropsy, which is an animal autopsy. Once we get inside the animal, typically we see pretty severe respiratory problems, so their lungs are, you know, just in terrible shape.
Yeah, I read that they make a sound like they're coughing through their blowholes, so that would be a pretty big red flag too, I would imagine. And I spoke with an official with the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission and their Fish and Wildlife Research Institute, who told me that the contagious nature of the virus creates a challenge for rehabilitation efforts. Would there be a concern that a sick dolphin that's sick with the virus could endanger the health of other dolphins being rehabbed?
Yes, that's an excellent point and question. And because of that, we are not bringing any of these animals in for rehab. And honestly, these animals are in such bad shape. When they do stand alive, they usually die within minutes or an hour, even before responders can arrive on scene. So these animals are in pretty bad shape when they stand alive. And just for those reasons that you pointed out, that it is so highly contagious, we are not bringing in animals into rehabilitation at this point in time.
Is there anything that can be done to help a dolphin, I guess, just not contract the virus in the first place? Any type of mitigation efforts there? Or at this point, are we mostly focused on just tracking where it goes and how severe it becomes?
Yeah, that's a good point as well. And there's really nothing we can do. We just have to allow the virus to run its course. We had a very similar event back in 1988 or 87 and 88 along the Atlantic coastline, very similar to this event. That particular event, about 700 dolphins were impacted. And so it's been, you know, almost 20-something years at this point, and the population has become susceptible to the virus once again, and once again it will run its course. However, what we can do is try to identify specifically what stocks are being impacted. So there's a potential of numerous stocks being impacted by this virus. We have the northern migratory stock, the southern migratory stock, we have the offshore bottlenose dolphin stock, and then we have the estuarian stocks like the Indian River Lagoon. And if we can pinpoint exactly what stocks are being impacted, we can help implement, it will help our managers and our scientists implement recovery plans for those species.
We're taking a look at what's behind the current dolphin die-off impacting dolphins in the Atlantic and which has moved into Florida's Indian River Lagoon. We're speaking with Blair Mays with NOAA's Southeast Fisheries Science Center and Megan Stolen with the Hub's SeaWorld Research Institute. Listeners can join our conversation. Phone lines are open at 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, or join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And Blair, I wanted to go back to something you were saying a moment ago about an event that had happened in the late 80s. And I was been surprised to read that when these events do happen, these outbreaks, if you will, typically we don't always know what causes them and they just run their course.
That's correct. A lot of these mortality events, which we've had 12 mortality events on the East Coast of the United States. We've had upwards of 17 in the Gulf of Mexico of the marine mammal mortality events. And many times we can't identify a cause. A lot of times because the animals are very decomposed when they wash ashore. But in this particular event, we are able to identify the cause. The animals were coming in with very specific symptoms, as Megan mentioned. So we were able to kind of look at those symptoms, to run the test, and determine it was a cetacean morbillivirus virus.
And I know people who might encounter a sick dolphin has been instructed not to touch them. Does the morbillivirus pose any risk to humans as far as contracting it from a cetacean animal?
No, humans really cannot contract it. From what we know about morbillivirus, humans cannot contract it. However, marine mammals and humans can share certain pathogens. So it's just really, it's a good common sense idea to really not expose oneself to animals that are stranded on the beach. They are likely carrying something, they have some disease, so it's really important to call the authorities. And in Florida, that would be the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, or you can call 1-877-WHALE-HELP, and that will get the closest training network participant or network organization to come and respond, and they will have the proper protective equipment and gear to respond to these stranded or ill animals on the beach.
And dolphins are considered a top mammal predator. Tell us about what role they play in the overall health of their ecosystem, and are enough dolphins dying at this point to cause concern about the future health of the lagoon, Megan?
We've kind of been hit with a double whammy in the last couple of years. So dolphins are an apex predator, and we look at them as sort of sentinel species for what's going on in different ecosystems. And so specifically in the Indian River Lagoon, they are virtually the top predator. What we've been finding in dolphins in the lagoon is a little bit disturbing. They have a history of high mercury levels and some skin problems and some other diseases that we've been concerned about for a long time. We've had a couple of unusual mortality events or die-offs. One of those before this one started hitting with Morbillivirus virus actually occurred early in the year of 2013, and that was, as far as we can tell, from a totally separate cause. Those dolphins were dying in the southern area, or actually middle of the Indian River Lagoon, away from where the Morbillivirus virus is killing dolphins now. And during that event, we found 78 animals stranded or dead in the lagoon, and a number of those were severely emaciated, which means they were really, really skinny. And so we tested them for all the normal things that we would normally look for in disease outbreaks and didn't find the smoking gun. What we did find was this population was just really skinny, and they weren't making it. So the hypothesis now, although the investigation is still under investigation, is that there may be some ecosystem changes associated with a possible prey shift or change in dolphin behavior that resulted in them essentially starving or becoming so skinny that they were fighting off other problems.
And Blair, I understand NOAA has smartphone apps that can be used to document dolphin strandings. Tell us about that app. How has that been useful as a crowdsourcing tool for NOAA so far?
Well, it's a great way for people to report strandings as well. I mentioned the phone number, but people can download the NOAA app online on their iTunes account, and they can report strandings. They can take a photo and send the animal or the photo into the app, and we will get the photo immediately and send. It's a way to get Stranding Network responders to arrive quicker. Obviously, we want to improve response times. And it's also, you know, good in those areas where there are people out on the boat or they're on an island where it's not so accessible by people, and it would be a hard time to get people there or a long time. So it really is a great way to provide quick, real-time information to our network so that they can respond faster and quicker.
And we are about out of time, but a final question. Blair, is there any reason to worry that the virus might continue to spread, further away from the Atlantic, maybe make its way into the Gulf of Mexico?
Well, that is something we are definitely looking at. We are monitoring the South Florida coastline on the East Coast, and as well as the Southwest Florida coast. Anytime a dolphin strands in those areas, we make sure that our stranding network collects the samples necessary to analyze to see if morbillivirus is present. So that is something that we are doing. We are in the monitoring phase. There is definitely concern of that. So it's something we are on top of and monitoring closely.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for today's show. Thank you so much, Megan and Blair.
Thank you. Thank you.
Megan Stolen is a research scientist with Hubb's SeaWorld Research Institute. Blair Mays is a marine mammal biologist for the Southeast Marine Mammal Stranding Network Coordinator for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. There's more information on today's show and past editions of the program online at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. Continue the conversation on Facebook at WGCU Public Media and on Twitter using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Thanks to my producers, Richard Chinqui and Luke Martin. This is WGCU Fort Myers 90.1 FM, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.